Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, John Blanche retires from Games Workshop. Gloomhaven gets a new edition. So okay. I don't think I need 100 pounds of Gloomhaven, but we'll see.
No.
Lorcana lawsuit, Disney.
Okay.
Lorcana. And U.S. Game Expo apologizes.
Oh, the U.S.
UK. Yeah,
oh, UK.
Yeah,
Game Expo.
Did I say apologize. U.S.? Yeah, UK.
Yeah, okay.
UK Game Expo, yeah. So they have... We talked about their problems in the past, and they're having,
right, okay.
they're continuing to have problems, similar to what we were talking about before the cast with BattleTech. So anyhow, I wanted to start with, update on Brinkwatch 2023, day 139, and there are still three black halflings waiting for Kyle to come across on his promise to eliminate himself from the hobby.
Yeah,
I guess maybe he didn't mean the management. He wasn't clear, but so he's probably not playing. He's just managing.
Oh, all right. Yep. Okay. All right. Yep.
As long as he's not playing, I guess we're going to have to accept that as a victory.
Well, where's exactly the hobby needs less of?
Yeah, like me, a less cis white man.
Right,
you know,
the sooner
the better, I think.
Leave the hobby?
Yes, leave the hobby. The sooner the better.
Well, there's his loophole, right? He didn't say leave management position,
right? Yes, right.
He's not a hobbyist.
Leave my six-figure salary? Hell no. Right, yeah. And bonuses? No, I'm not leaving my bonuses. Yeah. So, Kyle, we're still waiting. All right, those tricky... tricky corporate guys. Anyhow, there was a comment that I wanted to mention from last week.
Ooh,
so
nice.
Matt and I were talking about the Dragonbane is getting seven additional languages,
okay.
Or seven total languages, I think, of translation.
Is one of them Japanese? I don't know.
No, not yet. It's mostly European. Yeah, I think all European. But I think it's kind of supporting what they did before, because there's never been an English translation, but they have supported all the Scandinavian languages and other European languages. And Tasnu Arakun left us a comment on the stream and on YouTube, and it was very interesting what he had to say. The 87 edition of Drakkar Okdumoner was released in Norwegian and Danish, and in 1988 as Drakkar Okdumoner and Drager Ogdemoner. So very similar. So Norwegian and Danish, there's a lot of similarities between the languages. So we were wondering if they were going to try to stick with this Dragonbane and rename it that way to, you know, kind of clarify that it was a new version, that it wasn't going
to
be using
as
the old system.
The one that was released in like
80s. Yeah, right. Yeah. It seems like because they already have that identity and that presence, they probably will stick with that original name.
Yeah, okay.
So the commenter said, I'd expect the new edition to use the same names. Neither the old translations were particularly successful, though, and seem to be a few who are still have fond memories of the game. So I managed to find a copy or managed to find an episode of a Danish podcast talking about the game, and they commented on the weird terminology in the books. So since Drakkar Okdumoner, or the Swedish version, was the first Swedish TTRPG and dominated the Swedish scene for two decades, it was able to invent a lot of its own terminology.
Wow, okay.
So instead of adapting anglicisms from Dungeons & Dragons, they came up with things like role person mm-hmm. instead of a caricature instead of character. So yeah, so the... terminology they used was kind of completely original. So nowadays, I see younger Swedes who started to play D&D 5th edition in English and then switched to Swedish games. They have the same reaction, that there's a lot of odd terminology in there. And so I wonder which terminology Norwegian and Danish will use in the translation.
Well, I said nice, but that wasn't what I meant. Like, it's an interesting linguistical point, whereas, okay, my perspective, like D&D has dominated... Ask me how I feel about it. D&D has dominated the hobby for a long time. And the language or nomenclature it kind of introduced has permeated into other games, where the Swedish language, it seems like that's the opposite, right? This is the game, right? Like, not Dragonbane, but the other one has dominated for like 20 years. And so people adopted its nomenclature for the things. And now that they're being introduced to other games, they're like... This seems weird. Why don't we just use this other one? Interesting.
Yeah. So, and I noticed, just going through some of the Swedish version of this recent, of the recent update, that Free League is doing, looking at the Swedish names, the race names and everything are very different. Yeah. They feel very,
I don't use those.
Yeah. Very different. So, it'll be interesting to see. And so I'll keep up and see if there's,
I wonder if they kind of, if whatever Swedish names they've chosen in Swedish are as generic as like elf.
Could dwarf, yeah, whatever, yeah, right? Could be, yeah, yeah, yeah. It could be, and just to have their own identity too. I think because that was probably the big reason to even make the game, is we want to separate ourselves from this, you know, this Western tradition. Because of course, Dungeons and Dragons will be there, but yeah. But they'll make their own way. Yeah, and from talking to some Swedish gamers and things, they've said, yeah, it's still very dominant. 5e is, yeah, just like everywhere else, 5e is pretty dominant in the market. Yeah. But let's start with a little bit of a sad note.
I thought that was the only thing. That's
yes, well, it's Games Workshop related, so that's okay. Yeah, right. So yeah, the legendary 40K artist John Blanche is retiring, and so this has been that's a 46-year career of working with Games Workshop. So that's very impressive, and it's surprising that he survived all the generations. I mean, I guess he's so iconic and was so instrumental in developing the identity and the look of the game that, of course, you know, he would stay on, but the game has, you know, changed a lot since early editions. And I've also read, so it wasn't in this article, but I've also read some people suggesting it's for health reasons. Oh, so man. His work may not continue. So after retirement, he may not do so much. So it, yeah, just depending on.
Well, hopefully he's got some kind of health plan or whatever, because it's only been like a couple people, and I don't have exact instances, but I've seen people saying or selling their originals, right? Like they were these famous artists, and they're like, I'm retired, I've got health problems now.
Yeah,
I didn't have any kind of insurance, so I need money, so I'm selling these originals, right?
But we don't know. I mean, when Wizards took over D&D, they did that. They gave all the originals back to the artists.
Okay.
But we don't know if Games Workshop did that.
Oh, well, yeah. Games
Workshop may have a big room with all these gorgeous, you know, Blanche paintings that they're just like, this is ours. We're going to leverage this. This is an asset of Games Workshop. So, yeah, I'm curious if he does have his originals or not. But that's true that some artists do have to lean on that and just kind of, reverse mortgage their career. But, so as of May 31st, he stopped. And so that was since 1977 that he'd been working. Yeah. So a little bit about his career. So he started working for Games Workshop before Warhammer. So his first job was producing cover art for issues. He did 4 issues of White Dwarf when White Dwarf magazine was just pushing stuff. D&D. Yeah, games, and just mostly pushing D&D and was co-published by TSR back in the 70s. And so he's responsible for the box art for the first 3 editions of 40K. So very iconic, very identifiable work. And basically created the look and feel of that entire grimdark world. And it's changed since then, but you still feel, you know, you still see his creation and his kind of that Baroque, that heavy Baroque style, and a lot of the dark, you know, the lighting and kind of the
ridiculously darkness. Sanitized, though.
Yeah, right. It's getting
okay. Since we're on tangent, like, okay, I said before, like, okay, the new 10th edition rules, you can get the PDF of the core rules for free. Mm-hmm. And like, I said, I'm never going to play. Why not just read it anyway? Because I hate myself, right? So I was reading through it, and I'm like, I kind of don't really care about the rules. Mm-hmm. The artwork they had in little place, I'm like, I'm really digging these horrible little like servo skulls and cherubim assistant dudes. And I'm like, you're doing a really good job of evoking like that horrible, decrepit, grimdark stuff that I kind of don't feel the minis really
have now. I think that's definitely, because if you look at, like, we've seen so many now, like board game translations, when they do minis for a board game, we see illustrations directly translated to miniatures and sculptors really trying to do, you know, get the poses and get the feel of it so much into the miniature sculpts. And I don't think there's any cooperation, any connection between the illustrators that they're using and the sculptors that they're using. I don't think there's a heck of a lot of here, make it look like this.
Right.
Yeah, there seem to be riffing on their own thing.
Apart from the Leviathan, like 10th edition rules, I haven't really looked at modern GW stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, I wonder how you would... There was like a looseness and a griminess and just like a dirtiness to like the artwork and... How do you do that in a model? Mm-hmm, apart from being like joining the Turnip 28 Discord server and like using spackle or to just like slap it on your models, which I think I would die if I did that GW stuff. Like the money you have to pay for a GW model, I'm not going to dirty that thing up. Right? I'm not going to buy it, but I'm also not going to dirty it up, right?
Anyway. Yes.
Anyway, back to the main
point. Blanche is also responsible for his kind of iconic illustration of the Emperor of Mankind interned on the gold throne. That was
Where's that, like, that's skull, the look. Dude.
Yeah,
just like a corpse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, So he was appointed the company's art director after Games Workshop was acquired by Brian Ansel, and he worked from there. And so after they broke away from and came up with their own identity, their own games, he was responsible for that art direction. And he's also an avid miniature painter. So so you probably heard the term blanchitsu.
Yep.
So that style, that kind of that school of painting. So stark contrast between light and dark, limited color palettes, and just crud, you know, the griminess.
So apart from the crud, it's like Baroque style art.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, right. So that's cool. And so that inspired a lot of there's a Kill Team spinoff called Acolyte that uses the Blanchitsu style on Necropolis 28, and the whole Inquisitor 28, the whole Inc. 28 movement is basically, you know, inspired trying and doing kind of what you're saying, is trying to make the miniatures from Games Workshop look like the art, you know, the early art from Games Workshop, inspired by his art direction. So yeah, so he will exist, his influence will exist forever in that game, and people will want to carry it further than even the company is willing to go. Yeah. So I really hope, I mean, I don't think they're going to do it, but it would be really great because Black Library produces some nice high quality books. If they did an art retrospective book of everything, that would be so beautiful.
Only imagine how much that book would cost.
Oh, it would be worth it. Like, it'd be worth it.
No one. No one. We're going to fundamentally disagree on that, right? Like, a John Blanch art book produced by anybody else would be worth the price.
Right.
John Blanch art book produced by Games Workshop?
Yeah, but
fuck no.
They're premium like quality books. They're very expensive. Actually, they're not that expensive in Japanese yen, but don't tell Games Workshop. The quality is amazing. So if they did that, if they executed like that as a tribute, you know, to the the lifelong art director of this company, it would be pretty cool. But so we'll see if there's going to be any recognition or not. Who knows? Because, you know, they're not even, it's amazing that people even know his name, because Games Workshop famously doesn't credit artists. You know, there's not.
Now or in the past?
Probably a little bit more so in the past. You knew because it was such a small company. It started out so small. But now you have no idea. There's no artist recognition for anything in any of those books.
Well, yeah.
So it's just like Games Workshop Storyforge or whatever. It's just like all the writers are just part of the Storyforge. So I really hope
it's not
changes.
Art or writing, it's content.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's right. That's right. It is content.
Turn on the content fire hose.
Drop in content here. Right. So, hopefully there's still, there'll be some activity in social media or something, so we know that he's okay. But, I hope that his health doesn't diminish and kind of take him out of the creative scene. But, he will continue. His influence will be felt, I think, in the hobby forever. All right. So I already have about 70 pounds, probably a little bit closer, 75 pounds of Gloomhaven and Frosthaven.
Why? In the name of God, do you need to measure the contents of a board game in weight?
Well, I'm a little sizey. I'm body shaming Gloomhaven, I admit, but
you'll notice I've not mentioned how many pounds of unpainted plastic miniatures
But
still, it's pounds should not be something you measure a game in.
But it's just shipping to Japan. You're very conscious of the pounds, because they put it right on the box, 17 kilos, 70
and
point
how
something
much you've
kilos.
Spent,
So it's expensive to get here. So it really that's the frustration, is if I don't get it through the crowdfunding, I'm not going to get it because the shipping, just straight shipping from online retailers is going to double the price. It's not a thing. But anyhow, Gloomhaven, Gloomhaven's creator is talking about the changes in the new edition. So Isaac Childress is discussing how they're moving forward with a second edition of Gloomhaven. So it's been about 6 years since the original release. So Cephalofair has officially announced that they're doing a second edition. So Frosthaven just got into people's hands not that long ago, had some changes. There's some, more like refinements and mechanics and things that they added to the rules to make Frosthaven unique. And that inspired them to kind of go back through the original game because, Isaac, the creator, said, he will admit it's a popular game, but he'll admit it's not perfect. There's a lot, he's still, the community is very active and kind of like, trying to address the things that didn't work out, power balancing and certain like overpowered classes and things that make, the game balance could be improved. So that's what they're doing. They're going to go back through with graphic design and artwork, card iconography, kind of do what they did with Frosthaven. Campaign sheets are going to get updated, quality of life improvements, and just overall more well-written campaigns, because there's a lot of basically narrative in the right. game itself. So they want to, and also, I guess now they have this new version. There may be a little bit of like world, like a little bit of contradicting information okay. between the
also,
old world.
Also, there might be like mechanical stuff, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. yes, yeah.
Like
yeah,
there's keyword templating or stuff like that, yeah.
So the 95 scenarios that they have in the current game are going to be boosted to 100. So now there'll be 100 scenarios to play in basic Gloomhaven. So they're rebalancing the classes. There's things like the Night Shroud they mentioned needed a lot of fixing. It was incredibly overpowered because you can just run all over the board. You're invisible most of the time and just, you know, kill everything. So kind of like a rogue type class. And yeah, so they said basically giving attention to all of the different classes and fixing the detail, making it more challenging, but kind of less frustrating. So they want to entice, of course, both new players and people that have already played it. So they're saying that this is going to be enough of a revision that even if you play through the entire game, which takes forever because it's like an extended RPG campaign, you can do it again and it'll be different enough. Yeah, there'll be because you'll feel the balance changes right. and you'll feel enough that you're not playing through the exact same thing again. So yeah, that's interesting. So mm-hmm. there is a smaller board game called Jaws of the Lion set in the same world that is the creator says a better entry point to the world to see if you like it and you'd want to, you know, get more involved in a serious right. campaign. And I don't think that's not going to get a revision, but it is still going to exist as the kind of entryway to
Never
it.
Never really considered having a separate, smaller board game mm-hmm. as a tester to see if someone liked the setting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more of a, because it's a little bit like, what's the, I can't think of the D&D
thing,
yeah. But anyhow, like a, you know, politics in a city. So I think okay. Jaws of the Lion is a Waterdeep. Little bit, yeah, Waterdeep. It's like balancing the factions of a city. So it's, I think it's more like that to introduce right. okay. the city, because that's what Gloomhaven has as well. Is there's factions that you kind of ally yourself with and get mechanical benefits from. So it's kind of just to introduce that thing. And so Gloomhaven introducing that city and what a terrible place it is, but how you can make your way. So yeah, so they're trying. It's going to be a remaster and kind of nerfing the overpowered classes. But this is coming. This announcement comes after they've already announced that they're going to do miniatures for everything in the game and an official tabletop RPG. So this may be part of the process right. in the rewriting, because now they're going through and trying to connect the dots and fit, you know, kind of flesh out some of the details in the world. And so maybe as they're doing that, they're realizing, oh, maybe the old game doesn't quite, it could right. be better.
Or there's kind of like it's continuity issues, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, right. So that's amazing. It's a little too soon. I mean, I've not gotten anywhere near that we've not gotten Gloomhaven on the table. I played it digitally.
I played it. Yeah, I was looking for the shrink wrap box around here.
I played it digitally, but no, haven't gotten it on the table. But you know, it's well worth playing. It's a diceless, very interesting system, and feels very unique. What's that?
I wonder if the RPG would be diceless then.
I think so. Yeah, they've already said that they're gonna stick with their card system, because they're trying to use as many components from the game, the tiles, miniatures, and the cards, as possible.
Well, in respect, because I was expecting a 5e clone.
Yes, right. Yeah, yeah. It's Gloomhaven 5e. Yeah. right. No, so I think that's very respectable, and I think sticking with their original setting and everything, they want to keep it very distinct. So I like that. I mean, that may mean that there's going to be, you know, fewer people that will try it, because it's just going to be people that know the board game that might be interested. But I respect that. Yeah, they're sticking with what they've done. So yeah, hopefully they face no lawsuits. Speaking of lawsuits,
that was a seamless segue.
Wasn't that beautiful? I don't know. All right. So Disney Lorcana is being threatened by Upper Deck, the card publisher, with a lawsuit. And this comes at a very inopportune time, because we're right on the verge of the release, and the kind of collectible card game industry is saying they're bracing for the effect of Disney Arcana on the industry, because they said it's going to suck all the air out of the room, because it's going to have this huge secondary resale market, because it's Disney characters, it's Ravensburger, so it's going to be nice quality, good rules, and a nice execution. So they're expecting this to rival, and it's very family friendly. Okay. So they're expecting it to rival Magic very much, like compete.
Really?
Yeah, compete.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're expecting, and so all of these things, like we were talking about, like the Fantasy Flight, you know, Star Wars games, they're just going to get pushed pushed down the list, and no one's selling anything. So the pending launch of Disney Lorcana is going to be interrupted by this new lawsuit filed in California court. So the co-designer, Ryan Miller, previously created a similar game with nearly, quote, nearly identical mechanics to Disney Lorcana while under contract with Upper Deck.
Okay.
So the what Upper Deck is accusing them of, so first they're asking a judge for an injunction, stop this release, you know, we don't want this game coming out until this is resolved. They're saying that Miller designed a game called Rush of Ikor, and where you take on the roles of gods, but basically the mechanics, so substitute gods with Mickey Mouse and Goofy.
Who's basically a god, I mean, come
on. He is. Yeah. He's one of the elder gods, I believe. Yeah. So they're saying that same or similar mechanics exist in both games, and because this was done in a work for hire or under contract with Upper Deck, that you can't just, because obviously an original IP is not going to do nearly as well as a Disney branded IP. Yeah, no. So him taking this away,
Did Rush of Ikor get released?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay, so basically, yeah. Upper Deck is saying.
Now it's impossible. Yeah, it would be impossible to.
Oh, maybe
Result it after.
You know, yeah. Okay. So Upper Deck is saying Disney Lorcana plays almost exactly like this other game, Rush of Ikor, whom the designer created for us while under contract. So therefore, like, this is kind of ours.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Or there's. Okay. Well, I'm curious. I know nothing about these two games. I can't compare them. Like, as someone who attempts to try and design games, I do know that, like, I have, like, lots of game ideas, and I, like, get to the point where they're almost kind of finished, and then I have, like, a new idea, and it becomes an iteration of it.
Right.
Here's this new thing. And so only based on that and the fact you can't copyright game mechanics, you can only kind of copyright, like, the wording around it, I'm curious to see what happens with this lawsuit.
Well, the other big claim that they're making is that Miller, as the lead designer of this game, had direct access to Upper Deck's confidential proprietary I looked at that word information, including without limitation the draft rules, concepts, components, design, marketing strategies, and plans for implementation, and he maintained that access after being terminated from Upper Deck.
Okay.
So that's what they're kind of like leaning on.
That's a bit more substantial.
Yeah, and also claiming, and these are all just claims in this in this lawsuit, that Ravensburger induced and intended for Miller to breach his obligations to Upper Deck by kind of like saying, we've got the Disney license, why don't you make this game for us, and it's going to be amazingly successful.
Interesting. So,
yeah, calling them nearly identical trading card games.
Well, I guess then that makes it more substantial. Like, okay, these are nearly identical. You had access to everything after you left the company.
Right. And you created a very similar.
And you created a very similar. Yeah. Okay. I'm not saying either way, but I do want to see what happens with this.
Yeah. So the text, I think it's a Polygon article, that the text from the complaint is completely listed in there. That I think there's like a PDF. So you can take a look at what they're actually saying. So they're demanding punitive damages. Boy, pronunciation. Restitution and injunctive relief. Enjoining Ravensburger from publicly releasing the game. So basically, I think it's going to, if they know, everyone suspects this game is going to be insanely successful. Right. So they may just have to bite the bullet and say, how much do you want to let us release this game? So that might be what it's going to be. It's an out-of-court settlement of a large, undisclosed amount. And then Upper Deck says, no wrongdoing. Thank you very much.
Not like Disney doesn't have the money to do it.
Right. But it's Ravensburger, though, so they're just licensing. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what's going on.
Right. This is against Ravensburger, not Disney.
Yeah, so the designer, and so it's just the license. So a quote from the Upper Deck president, we invested significant time and resources into the development of a new and novel trading card game. And so our current leadership values the importance of protecting intellectual property. Of course. And so we encourage competition in the industry, but we also strongly believe in playing by the rules. And so they're claiming there was some malfeasance.
Malfeasance, nice word.
I pronounced that right too. So this is going to be the Disney game, of course, is going to be much more family friendly. It was originally announced in August of 2022. They've released some initial cards that are probably worth hundreds of dollars now at the D23 fan convention last September. And, of course, instantly a burst of speculation on the secondary market. These cards are going to be insane. Like the ones that are, you know, only from attending events or special foil cards or whatever, they're going to be insanely expensive for collectors. Yeah.
They're not going to. But, and why... Yeah, they're not gonna, because why would they, right? Mm-hmm. Because, oh man, think about Pokemon cards, right? And how much people
right. paid.
Anyway, yeah, the secondary market encourages people to buy first-hand yes. stuff, right?
Right, right.
I was gonna say
an overbuy. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They should, yeah, overbuy, exactly. I can only imagine how kind of like regular people who want to play the game.
Yeah,
parent goes to the toy store, sold out,
right,
gone.
Right, right.
Only because prospectors have
mm-hmm.
bought yeah, them all up.
That's true. It's going to be that they're making a family-friendly game that kids can play, and kids can't touch.
Kids won't be able to play it. Yeah,
kids can't touch the cards. Yeah. So, yeah, that's a real shame. And I hopefully they're going to produce enough. Hopefully lowering the value in the secondary market because there's just a glut of these cards, right. But also letting kids get their hands on.
I don't think
them,
they're going to. But what they would do is the Fantasy Flight Living Card Game rule kind of. Roll out like with Netrunner, where it's like, here's your pack.
Mm-hmm.
They're all identical, right?
Yeah, right.
There are no random packs, just these packs. They're all the same, and everyone kind of gets
stuff. But if you stayed at a certain Disney hotel and they had a special card on your pillow, and it just would be wonderful. Yeah,
first off, I wouldn't be caught dead in a Disney hotel, right?
Yeah, so I suspect
all my money goes for paying for other expensive stuff.
There's going to be a lot of that.
I'm sure there is.
A lot of that marketing. So there was a public demo of Lorcana recently at the UK Games Expo 2023. Ooh. So people have gotten their first look at it and are just getting so excited for this release.
And is that why people had to apologize?
Yeah, right. Yes, right. Yeah, that's exactly why they apologize. Yeah. Right. So speaking of the UK Games Expo 2023, they did apologize, not for Disney Lorcana's demo, which they probably should have, but they rejected RPGs over queer content.
Oh, I have seen this, right?
Yes, yeah, okay. Yes, yes. So Avery Alder's Dream Askew was blocked from appearing for themes of sexuality and orientation, and Jade Dragon's Sleepaway reportedly had its text changed to describe queer content. Yes. So so blocked from appearing because of the themes of sexuality and queerness. So WH author tweeted about applying at the Games Expo to run a session of Dream Askew mm-hmm. and Sleepaway. And ran into this trouble. So it was turned down and they cited the queer content and theme specifically as the reason of refusal. So a quote from Arthur said, in the email I got in regards to Dream Askew's rejection, one of the organizers wrote, "We don't have game misspelling error with themes of sexuality or orientation in them at Expo." So the game is, you know, in the marketing and everything is clearly described as queer strife amid the collapse mm-hmm. for Dream Askew. And so it's not like, you know, anything was being hidden. It was very straightforward. Sleepaway did get successfully accepted, but of course they had their the event description modified as because of references to the queerness were removed.
It's funny. I backed Dream Askew, because it's actually like a two-part book. There are two games inside it.
Uh-huh.
And they use the same mechanics. It's token-based,
mm-hmm.
and it's funny because it does say, basically, like, queer commune after the apocalypse. It's not even Monster Heart's level of sexuality, right?
Yeah,
like, the only thing I could say about it from reading through it is your list of pronouns for your character
mm-hmm.
is something like, it's not even, like, it's, like, they're... I don't want to say weird. They're pretty much non-traditional roles. It's just like, it's like Dagger Daddy, Ice. They don't even say Ice Queen. It's just like Ice. Like you're looking at these and you're like, these are wild.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like, that's literally all it is, except for the very clear call out of, yep, this is a queer community after the clap. Like, that's it. Like, there's no, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure there's no like sex moves away
in
Monster Heart. So it's just like.
Yeah. So it wasn't content. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and so they also mentioned Sleepaway is a GM-less belonging outside belonging system game,
which is mm-hmm. the system that used in Dream Apart, Dream Askew.
Ah,
it's called Belong Outside Belong.
Ah,
the idea is you're this kind of this group of outsiders mm-hmm. who all belong together. So that's why it's belonging outside belonging.
Nice,
tokenless
nice.
Stuff. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So a horror game of belonging. The publisher Possum Creek describes it as a horror game of belonging. outside belonging about a group of summer camp counselors protecting their queer youth from a monstrous cryptid, which I guess is a lindworm in this case. Yes. Ooh. So, so Arthur Russo says, so I'm pretty sure I described the game as queer horror RPG on summer camp shenanigans and exploration of identity, but the word queer was removed in the final published event. Yeah. So, and this follows on. So, the organizers are blaming a very paranoid, volunteer.
Sure.
And hearkening back to the thing that we talked about on this cast, their 2019 problem where they ran a session of Tales from the Loop that started out with people were sodomized.
All kinds of problems.
The back of a van. Children, no less. They're having trouble with running these events. Now they don't know which side to err on, being too, too permissive and just letting people run all kinds of
UK Games Expo, they're allowed to set their own rules, people are allowed to say fuck your rules, we're not coming, right? Like that's the flip side of setting your own rules, right? Mm-hmm. But like I think the larger, and I'm kind of broadening it out here, the larger problem is people seeing sexuality, especially of non cishet boring people, as inherently sexual, where it's not, right? You're conflating the fact that there are going to be queer characters in this game as there being sex in this game, right? Like, and too many people do that.
Yeah.
That's not the case, right?
And especially, like you're saying, if there are no mechanics or intimacy or anything in the game,
I don't want to say there's no mechanics or intimacy, only because I don't remember, but I remember reading through it, and like Monster Hearts is definitely like, everyone has a sex move. Like you're going to fucking fuck in this game, right? Unless you're like the vampire, right? Because then fucking like put you on a short stick, right? Or you're going to pull in D&D and not engage with sizable chunks of the mechanics, in which case, why the fuck are you playing this game, right? Play something else. Play something like Kids on Brooms, right? Which I'm not saying is a bad game. I'm just saying, anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, so reading Belong Outside Belong, like nothing jumped out at me as going, whoa, here's the sex moves like in Monster Hearts. That's not me saying there aren't sections on intimacy or stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, so the Game Expo directors released a statement on Twitter. So two errors were made in the run-up to this year's UK Games Expo. Firstly, an RPG scenario was rejected due to subject or theme of sexual orientation. And on the first matter, we reviewed the email chain between the RPG manager and the individual submitting and found that it is true. We do not accept scenarios containing sexual content due to past experiences of this type, which cause distress and upset to players. However, this does not extend to sexual orientation.
Yep, there you go.
Right. Is there a policy to censor based on sexual? It is not our policy to censor based on sexual orientation, and we failed the GM by rejecting the game.
Yeah, you did.
On the second matter, this was an error in administration where two people each thought the other had dealt with the matter, and so the training was not set. Oh, that's right. So that's something that they do as well. If you're going to run a game, you have to attend this online kind of training session to go over how they want things to be done at the event.
Okay.
And there was scheduling miscommunication. So Arthur, the GM in this case, was not able to attend that session. It wasn't scheduled for it. So didn't know any of these extra rules. So that may be, may have contributed to why they were misrepresenting the sessions. So come on, UK Games Expo, you can do it. I don't know. It's weird. So do you think, because, there's always effort made to make tabletop RPGs that are kid friendly or, good starting places for kids or whatever. But an actual gaming event where it's all tabletop role playing, it's not there's not a great way to make it completely kid friendly. And like you're talking about, you don't even know if you want to introduce D&D to your kid just because of where it comes and
Boy, howdy, the fucking pushback I got on
That's right. Yeah, so it's but there's kind of implied. I mean, and it's always been like that, even like going to, you know, comic book conventions, there's a lot of nudity. So it's not like completely kid friendly. And so you're just gonna have to accept you're taking your kid into a more mature environment, and you have to kind of pay attention and control what they're
Okay, there's a couple things here, because I'm thinking about like the local nerd sanctuary around here, like Den Den Town, right? Like I used to enjoy going, and now I'm going to like pick up stuff, and I'm like, oh god, can I not like have to wade through an ocean of plastic anime titty, right? Like, all I want to do is go and buy some paints, right?
Right, right.
So, and I've thought about, no, I don't want to take my kid through that, only because of the amount of ridiculous amount of pretend quasi nudity. But it's kind of, it's similar in the fact that parents can't be completely absolved of not paying attention to what they're bringing their kids to or letting their kids experience, right? So, but on the other hand, you can't make things, I guess you could make things, would you? I don't know. I don't know if you can make things entirely kid-friendly, because unfortunately kid-friendly means so many different things to different people,
right?
You'd have to get to like, okay, does everyone agree this is kid-friendly? Yes. Okay, well, we're playing in rock, scissors, paper, right?
Yeah.
That's the only thing we could do, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, I get it. On the one hand, like, you don't want perverts like their first GM from, like, 2019, right?
Right.
So they've got to be like, whoa, like, safety tools. Everyone's got to feel safe. But, yeah, then, like I said, kind of conflating sexual orientation with sexual contact and situations is part of the problem. And then also going, okay, let's overreact and just say no. And you just, I don't know. That was very incoherent, but I don't. Yeah, well, I don't think you're going
to
get one.
Yeah, I think it's difficult because, yeah, you'll never be able to satisfy all parents as, you know, be able to protecting them from something. So just have a big warning, you know, this is up to you, you know, get your hand ready to cover your kid's eyes or ears if, you know, you're going to be dealing with a lot of mature content and it's not,
Yeah.
So I don't know. But yeah, but like you're talking about, also safety tools and things are important to have in these sessions because it doesn't have to necessarily be kids that are going to be, you know, uncomfortable by.
That's the thing, like, anybody uncomfortable, and then I mean, okay, then tossing into the mix like bad faith actors, right? Trying to like screw over, like, on both sides, can't believe I used that phrase, right? Like bad faith actors on like the rule side saying, oh, this isn't strict enough, blah blah blah, right? And then bad faith actors on the other side going, oh, well, you didn't say I can't do this.
So,
I don't
Next you're gonna be saying they're not sending their best. I'm waiting for you.
All right.
But so we'll see. So apart from that demo of Disney Lorcana, UK Games Expo needs to keep apologizing. It's just gonna be hard. You're not gonna be able to make people happy because there's a lot of different kinds of expectations. But it's a tricky thing now because I think everything is getting a little bit harder to navigate, and they're just not not making it easy because it's weird.
I think it's okay, my perspective, it's getting harder to navigate because of like the political climate. I don't know about the UK. Well, UK is going to be especially in like the US, right? Like the political push. Like I saw someone saying that it was like the Transformers con in Orlando.
Oh no.
And I forgot exactly what the character was, but like someone was tweeting out saying, "Okay, what the fuck?" Right? And the convention said, "You specifically cannot cosplay as this character due to the laws of Florida." Because the character is canonically trans, and due to like the drag ban in Florida, they're like, no, like we just you.
Wow.
And it wasn't even their fault. I think the person was kind of yelling at them a little bit unfairly. I'm like, it's not the con's fault, right?
Right.
They just got to say, due to federal laws,
right,
you can't cosplay as this character, which is fucking ridiculous.
Right. No, but I think federal law against cosplay though does.
And the thing is, like, it was a fucking robot. Like, it's a robot. That's... Robots have no goddamn gender, right? Like, what? Right. So anyway, people were kind of talking about that. Then where people were complaining is kind of feeling blindsided and not being able to refund a ticket or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then it kind of becomes okay.
Right.
Because my first reaction was, dude, what do you want? the convention to do. This is federal law, right? Mm-hmm, sorry, mm-hmm. They're just covering their ass.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it gets back to, and we're not going to refund any tickets, then yeah. It's kind of like, oh, now we can yell at you, right?
Right. Like, yeah, you feel bad enough for spending thousands of dollars building a robot costume, and then,
I got to imagine robot costumes are not as expensive as furry costumes. But anyway, yeah.
Well, never mind. Yeah.
Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, there's different, different functions. Yeah. All right, anyhow. Yes, so that'll do it. So at least UK Games Expo keeps us talking about it because they always fuck up.
Years, right?
something happens. So keep going, UK. that's it for this week.
Yeah.
So where can people find you?
On Twitter until that site goes down. But, Apartheid Clyde. HiveMind. I'm also on Instagram, which is also HiveMind, HyveMynd, where I'm posting pictures of kind of Mordheim-y people from the war game Atlantic Conquistadors. So
nice. Yeah. Cool. Excellent.
How about you?
So I'm still doing my single panel gag cartoons, so Abuse Cartoons on Twitch and YouTube and social media. You can find Abuse Cartoons. And then also if you want to read the archive for the past 20 years. So yeah. gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And if you'd like to support what we're doing here with the weekly, please consider becoming a patron, a weakling, as a matter of fact.
Oh, apparently I do mean state law.
Oh, yes. Oh, state law. That's right. Yeah. So a weakling will let you tell us what you'd like to see on the weekly. And that is available at patreon.com/upturntable.
I missed my cue about this. Oh, no. Sorry.
And also, we've got actual plays, reviews, unboxings, all kinds of good stuff on our channel. So UpturnTable on YouTube and Twitch, and also UpturnTable.com.
We've got playthroughs, too.
Yes, yes.
Kind of.
Yes, right. Yeah, we'll have, and we should have a Monster Hunter World unboxing one of these days. Yeah, we got a lot of boxes still sitting here.
A lot of boxes, yeah.
All right. So that'll do it for this week.
Yep.
See you next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.